Finance Committee. First meeting for the 15th of November. Okay. Have we got any apologies for absence?
We've got apologies from Councillor Brian Cole, Councillor Richard Scott, Councillor Rob Mazdy.
Of course.
And I think Councillor Art Williamson, I think.
Of course. I bet it isn't. Pauline Garber. Alex Sadiq is hoping to get it, but she's travelling back because she was going to stand in. And I'm not sure about Tim Duncan. He was hoping to get here.
I saw him this afternoon.
Yeah.
Is he on this?
Well, to be honest, Chair, I well, he's not the committee, so if they like to come in. And just to let you know that I know Brian Toy, not on here, but Brian is in hospital. So
regarding the money that we hold on behalf of the patrol boat, and she was involved in the original request to ask for funds from various parties, and Julie and I looked up who had contributed to the original patrol boat fund, and it was Limpstone Sailing Club, X Sailing Club, Limpstone Fishery and Harbour Association, X Power Boat Club, X McKee Residents, Starcross Fishing and Cruising Club, Woodby Parish Council, Cockwood Boat Club, Topsham Sailing Club, Exeter Town Council, Devon County Council, Exeter Estuary Management Partnership, Exeter City Council, Starcross Yacht Club, East Devon District Council Community Safety Partnership, and East Devon District Council Leisure and Lifestyle. Now, her view was that we ought to go back to them and ask them if they are happy for us to pass those funds on to Exeter City Council to use when their new patrol boat is launched. She didn't think it was appropriate for us to potentially offer that money to the Habitat Regulations patrol boat, because she said the remit of the Habitat Regs boat is completely different to the remit of the patrol boat that we funded the fuel for, and that remit fits more closely with Exeter City Council. So in light of the fact that Exeter City Council are hoping to get their boat on the water next year, she said she thought it might be pertinent if we wrote to all of the organisations that originally donated the money, and then said to them that this is what we're proposing to do, that we're proposing to give the balance of the fund, which is several hundred pounds, £589.53, that we're proposing to give that to Exeter City Council on condition that it's used for fuel costs in the new patrol boat. Otherwise, she said we would really have to offer back that money to the respective clubs, but then trying to work out pro rata what we'd have to give back against their original donations would be a bit of a maths challenge.
To declare an interest on this, because I'm in chair of the Exeter Estuary Management Partnership.
I also sit on that partnership as I
So there were 15 organisations that contributed originally. So we'll just have to email them all and say, you know, that we've had this money sat in a fund and that, you know, our finance committee, in conjunction with the clerk of the Accessory Management Partnership, suggested that this would be a resolution. And then we offer it to Exeter Council, but on condition that it's used for fuel costs.
Is it better just to leave it where it is?
Well, what's important, leaving it?
It's just sat there doing nothing, and we can't spend it on anything else, so,
exactly.
You know.
Exactly, yeah. So it'd be a line less in June's account, wouldn't it?
Mm.
But it's 15 people we've got to contact. So that's work, isn't it?
But we'll you know, we'll perhaps do it by email, BCC everybody in, and just make it as easy as possible and see. And we can word it in such a way that if we don't hear to the contrary, then we assume that we've got their permission to pass that money on to us.
Because it wouldn't be a lot of 15, would it?
No. No, precisely. And we probably have to pro-rata it so that the refund is proportionate to what they originally donated. It would be,
oh,
it's a
big
it would be
a
nightmare.
Yeah, sorry I brought it up to you.
That's fine.
Okay. Are there any... Just one matter arising, Chair. In the minutes, it had the income expenditure figures. Well, for the festival, the figures have not been audited and the report will be available at the next finance meeting. I know the figures are actually in the budget and the papers that were sent, but are we actually going to get a report on the festival circulated to others and on the festival committee, please?
So I've just been, we have a festival working party meeting last week when we presented the final accounts. We were still waiting for a few more payments to come in, but the net position is that the festival has washed its face. The expenditure was about £67,000-£68,000, and the income offset that fully. You know, it's not profit making, but it's never intended to be profit making. And I've been sent the draft notes of that meeting today, but I haven't had a chance to read them. So we could circulate the festival accounts with the festival working party notes, and then everybody will have a copy of the accounts specifically for the festival. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Right. Are there any further declarations of pecuniary interest and dispensations?
No? No, I mean, I suppose it's not for me to make a declaration of pecuniary interest and dispensation, but you may note that I am the secretary of the 299 Squadron Air Cadets, which has submitted a grant application. So that's just to highlight that I am the secretary of the squadron.
Report from the responsible financial officer.
Okay. So everybody's been given a report. You've got balances in our current account. We need somebody to do a bank of reconciliation.
Yeah.
So yes, balances on the community account and the active saver account. Obviously, the active saver balance excludes the £100,000 that we've got invested in the CCLA fund. There are two unpresented checks, totals of payments that were expended in September and October are listed there for your information. And then the funds held on behalf of others. So we've mentioned the patrol boat. We've still got trees for the avenues for this small amount of tree fund. The charitable trust funds held on behalf of the Williams Adams Westwood Trust and the Excellent Projects Trust. Just to update you that Julie has been in touch with Mitchell Moore's solicitors and they have identified a trust specialist who is going to work with us to see what scope there is for us to use those funds you know, more broadly than we think the bequest allows us to do, which is what you asked us to investigate. So we've had to send him some information already, And we're waiting for him to come back, and then Julie and I will go in and see him and see what advice he's able to give us. Just one other thing to highlight is that the valuation for the Keurig Dr. Pepper shares that we hold as part of the Charity Deposit Fund account, you'll see that that fund value has gone down significantly. So you'll recall that we had the dividend in September 2018, which was part of this rights issue associated with it. But actually, the share price has been negatively impacted. Now, you know, obviously, it might come back up. It might be associated with the rights issue. But we're just highlighting that although we've had this large deposit associated with the rights issue and the special dividend, the share price has dropped significantly. We'll keep an eye on that. And we've still got national savings bonds. But I think in terms of the charitable trust funds, you know, we will seek advice from Mitchell Moores on what we should be doing generally with the trust funds, because I know there is this outstanding concern as well about them being in US dollars and the fluctuation against the sterling exchange rate, and you know, there are a number of issues around these trust funds that we need to sort of try and get some solid advice on really. So we'll take that all to Mitchell Moores and then we will report back.
Can you ask something? Can you just ask a question? Ask a question on the shares. I'm not a shares person, so this might sound totally gobbledygook. But as we seem to be losing quite a lot, would it be better to cash all that in and then just put it into our reserves?
That's what they're investigating, whether we can do something about it. But it was, at the time, that's already been investigated once, hasn't it? When David was still alive.
It's very difficult.
It's difficult because this was all part of the original bequest.
Right.
So we have to make sure that we're compliant with the will.
Yeah.
And this is where, you know, the interpretation of what those funds are spent on and how they're invested and all the rest of it. We need to seek some advice to find out what scope there is for us to look at it. So we'll take this to the trust fund expert at Mitchell Moores and then we'll report back on what scope there is.
Okay.
If you look at the top of the page, when you're just larger than mine, you see that in end of June last year it was only 54,000. Then two or three companies merge, and you know, you get like extra dividends and that. That's what caused the spike.
Right.
But of course now it's over.
Yeah.
And it's dropped back down again.
The monetary value of the fund has gone up.
Gone
up to 98,000. That's the monetary fund of the value of the fund we have. But what we're saying is that the share price value of the shares that we hold in that fund.
Mm-hmm.
The share price value has dropped. So actually the extra cash that we now hold has almost been offset by the drop in share value. And if we were to redeem those shares, actually we're still in a fairly sort of neutral position because the big injection of cash that we thought we were going to be able to benefit from has been offset by the shareholding that we hold as part of the same trust fund.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I get somebody to sign a statement, please?
Shall I go on to the income and expenditure report while you're looking out the reconciliation of the bank statement? Okay. So you have a detailed income and expenditure report. There are no areas of concern. The only areas where we have an overspend in inverted commas are areas which when we've already agreed that we were going to take funding out of reserves, it's things like flagpoles, etc.
Julie's asked about that one. She said she's moved it, it's probably the one. You know, if you look down under
a 4, 1, 2,
down 4128, so there's a certain £3 there on the rest of the end. Judy says she's moved it.
Yeah,
coded to the wrong thing. Yeah, well, no, that's why I asked her when have we got a service agreement through the back, but it's the wrong coding on it.
Column that you need to sort of be paying attention to is the last column, really, which is funds available. And if the figures at the bottom of each section heading are positive, then that's showing what funds we've got against the original budget at the half-year point. If it's in brackets, it's indicating that there's been an overspend.
Can I ask a question? I'll go back to that. We've got the War Memorial maintenance. That also includes the bags, does it not? Down the seafront?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
So the flags and flagpole maintenance, we agreed that we were going to take some of that out of reserves. So you'll see that we've spent £7,690, which exceeded our budget of £5,000. That's to do with the new flagpoles. So we're showing an overspend of £2,690, but we'd agreed that overspend would come out of our reserves.
Yep.
But what happens is that adjustment won't show until year end, because our reserves sit in a different... report. Touched on the festival. They're asking a few payments that are still due from the festival for that washes face. And all the rest of it looks very healthy at the 6-year point. But bear in mind that some of these budget lines we put extra funding in because we were aware that we wanted to be able to accrue some funds at the end of the financial year towards our sinking fund for buildings, etc. After the income and expenditure report, you've then got a list of payments that we've made, a list of payments that were made in September and October. And I don't think there's anything that should cause concern there, but if you want to have a quick look through and ask if there's anything that you'd like clarification on. As part of our new financial regs, we have to show you now a detailed payment list, which we have to minute that we've shown you. And then what we're also asking for is we're asking you to, as a different agenda item, we're asking you to formally approve some of the advance regular payments that we make. Again, the minute that you've seen that list. Alright, but that's a separate agenda item. So this is just the list of individual payments that have been made during September and October.
Sorry, can I just ask a question on 1178 sponsorship of Rainbow Bands?
Yes.
I've been approached by a couple of businesses. Are we still in a position to be able to take more?
We haven't got any capacity at
no.
All the roundabouts are sponsored.
Okay.
Julie and I were talking about this today. they're sort of pretty much tied up with LED and the pavilion and the Creeley.
Okay.
Alright, at the moment there isn't any opportunity. Okay?
Yeah.
Any questions on the individual payments?
The cleaning.
Yes.
Here.
24 for the non. So
is that in respect of Minster cleaning?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the cleaning for our offices.
Right.
So it's £294.67 in September. That does fluctuate slightly because some weeks we've got 4 weeks and some weeks we've got 5. But that's the cleaner that cleans our offices in the town hall. And it's Minster Cleaning. They come in twice a week. They come in on a Wednesday evening and they come in on a Sunday. They clean all our offices, they hoover the carpets. They empty all the bins, they take all the paper shredding and the recycling down for us. All the desks get sanitised and cleaned, all the light switches and skeletons.
We'll do a better job then.
We have to say that, you know, that is the going rate for cleaning. No, it is the going rate for cleaning. I was hoping to ask Sue, because Steve had raised the same question with me. I'm not sure how many hours that equates to, but I want to say he's probably here 3 hours every time he's here, and he comes twice a week.
He is
very good. So 6 hours times, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, however many weeks there are in the calendar year. But when we were appointing Minster Cleaning, when we moved to Roll Street, Sue Cody did do quite a lot of research, and we interviewed quite a few companies, and we've been, you know, very happy with the level of service and the reliability of Minster Cleaning. I'm not sure how long their contract term goes on for, and I was hoping to clarify that with Sue, but she's not in today. But I can find out for you, and at some point, obviously, it would come up for review and renewal. So if you want us to test the market again, we certainly can.
Yeah, it just seemed quite a lot, but I suppose there's quite a lot of room.
Well, they're doing, you know, my office reception, Judy's office, the middle room, and Chetna and Carla's office, as well as the downstairs space.
And you're satisfied with it?
Yeah.
We find them very good. Very good.
That's fine.
We're now moving on to the grant applications.
So the payments are approved, yeah, payments have been seen.
Just going back to agenda item 7. The payment list, you're happy with the payment list that you've had? Yeah.
Do you need to propose your own second?
We received the statement of income and expenditure in its budget and reviewed the reconciliation of accounts against bank statements and detailed payments. And who had that? Who had the bank statement?
Bruce did. No, I went about the payments.
They're on another advert, so they're on the list of scheduled payments.
Oh, right, okay. Sorry, thank you.
Okay. So just on the grant applications, it might be useful for you to know that at this point in the financial year, you've got £5,482 left in the grant pot. £5,482 left in the grant pot. I mean, I can give you the background on this if you want me to.
No, I think I'm doing that. As soon as I find it.
I'm happy to propose it. And, you know, 2 laser printers at £598 is very competitive. And I think those places need that to be able to operate. So I'm quite happy to propose the £598.
I was going to say I've got screens and that kind of
thing. No, I was just thinking the amount they're asking for and what they're asking for.
It's not
I personally never think it's
lead and print.
No, that's
cheap.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you'll remember that you deferred the request for funding at the last finance meeting and asked me to find out some more information. So I've been in touch with the Jurassic Coast. Now, Budleigh, Salterton Town Council, and I believe Seaton Town Council and possibly Sidmouth have all agreed to contribute towards the funding of the book. Since it was first published, they've sold 5,000 books, and they're looking at a reprint of 2,000 to 2,500 at this stage, depending on how much support we get. And basically, the profits from those books go directly into the Jurassic Coast Fund.
I'm just going to ask, do we know what the outlets are? Is it only tourist information centres and similar type of offices? It's just that somebody actually asked me, you know, that they hadn't seen them. And I know tourist information offices have it because I've seen them in Dorset, actually. So I'm just wondering if that's the primary there.
Well, so from their website. So they have an online shop on the Jurassic Coast website, so it's sold through there as well. But it is deemed to be the sort of the guide to the geology of East Devon. So I think, you know, if you're interested in geology, it is perceived to be the sort of the definitive guide, obviously endorsed by the Jurassic Coast. So they were looking for a contribution of £500 to £750 from each town so that they can cover the print costs. And that would be acknowledged through a sponsorship recognition on the back page.
Yeah, that's what I was actually going to say, but you got there, that if we were going to give them money, it's because I remember that Colt a few weeks ago, Noel Harrier at Colt with the Transnations was concerned about getting money from the Jurassic Coast Trust. He actually wanted them to give money for various purposes, and so I think it's important that we are seen to receive something back, because it is an item which may be of concern to the community, because they wanted to get money from the Jurassic Coast Trust, and clearly if we're giving, we should appear to get something back from it. So, I'm happy with it, but I just think that we need to make sure that everybody's informed of how we're going forward.
So if I can just clarify that what Noel Harrow had picked up is that the Jurassic Coast have been given some funding. It's a bit like the Wild Exmouth project. They've been given funding specifically to recruit some volunteers and use it as a training exercise and an employment skills enhancement exercise. Very similar to the Wild Exmouth project, engaging with volunteers to do work as ambassadors along the Jurassic Coast. And Noel Harrower brought up at the Colt meeting whether there was any scope for the money that they'd received to be used on an information centre in Exmouth. And I had to explain that they would have had to have specified quite clearly what that funding is going to be used for, and it's for a very defined project in the same way that we've supported a very specific project with the Wild Exmouth project. And I also explained that money has come from the Coastal Community Fund, the Coastal Community Fund, from which we have had funding in East Devon, because it was that fund that paid for Professor Nigel Jump to come and do the economic plan, which then prompted the tourism survey. And I'm aware that Exmouth Coastal Community Team have applied to funding from the fund for some infrastructure projects, but they only ran to the second stage of the application process, and then the applications were rejected. So it's not the case that somebody isn't looking out for Exmouth's interests and trying to get money out of the same fund, but Noel is misinformed in that he thought we might be able to tap into the money that's been granted to the Jurassic Coast Fund. And I said, you won't be able to, because the criteria on what that's spent on will be very specifically outlined in their grant offer letter. And it's not a case that there's just a pot of money sat there that we can tap into. They'll have to spend it on what they've said they're going to spend it on. But what we need to do in Exmouth is perhaps look out for other funding opportunities that will, look up the things that the community have got aspirations for. So that's the relevance of Noel Harrower's request.
Mm-hmm. No, I just wanted to say that I think it's really useful in the book, and I bought several on the many years ago and took them to France and to Germany with our swimming groups, and they were very well received, because it's, you know, it's quite special, isn't it? And they made really nice, you know, Christmas presents for people who are interested in it. I think it's good, and I think we should give them.
Well, seeing as how we're the biggest town, I think we should, and we've got the money in grants, 750.
It hasn't been put forward as a grant application, so that, you know, it doesn't have to come out of a grant application.
But we've still got.
You can sponsor it, and it can come out of, you know, other funds.
Okay. What would you like to do?
I think I'd like to say come out of the funds, Chair, because we don't know what I know.
So,
they
asked for 500, is that?
Yeah.
500 or 750, they asked.
Between 500 and something. Well, I propose that we give them 750, because I think it's very useful. Yeah. As you say, we're the largest town, we're on at the end, and we should support it. It would be nice to have our name in the front of the book as well.
Exactly.
So we have, for example, we've still got £1,000 in our advertising budget. We haven't spent a penny on advertising, so, you know, sponsorship advertising, it you know, might fit quite nicely in there. That's probably where I would put it, if you're happy with that.
So I'm happy to support Brenda's proposal of £750.
Okay. Okay. You all in favour?
Yes.
Right, and now on the 10th, to authorise a list of schedule payments in accordance with financial regulation 5.6.
So this was circulated to you by email, and this is, we suggested at the last meeting that, again, as part of our financial regulations, we have the remit to ask for your authorisation in advance for a number of regularly scheduled payments. And you agreed at the last financial meeting that you're happy with that, but we didn't min it because it came up in general conversation. It wasn't an agenda item. So it's gone back on the agenda as an agenda item for you to formally ratify that you're happy for us to pay these payments on a regular basis. Now, any that are done through BACS payments, they'll still require the two authorised signatories as part of the transfer process. So it's only if we've got any that are paid by direct debit or standing order.
Yeah, but them signed as well.
Yeah.
Because
so they're all subject to the same payment authorisations, actually. We're just complying with
financial regulations. But they're coming from the council every time.
Just one on the grass cutting.
Mm-hmm.
That may increase or whatever, but are we getting a printout of exactly what they're cutting, when they're cutting?
So yes, Chetner has been working with Nick. I can see we're not in the grass cutting season at the moment. But Chetner has been working with Nick Christo to understand the grass cutting schedule, and she's got a copy of that. But she's also been putting under pressure to add the excellent grass cutting that's done on our behalf to the East Devon District Council eMap system, so that we can interrogate it on the map with the frequency. So there's still a little bit of work ongoing, because if you interrogate their mapping system, which we have access to, we can only pull up information relating to the grass cut that they do on their own behalf, and what we want is we want ours included. And then there's scope for us then to import that into our own mapping system so that we've got an up-to-date data set for it.
The only reason I bring that up is because the last time we had a meeting with regards to grass cutting, we were looking at a different contract for next year, so something you might consider.
Mm. So I think that's something that we will need to look at as part of the budget review process as well.
Is there anything else on this?
Yeah. It's just on the clock tower maintenance, £752. Is that to look at
the clock?
The clock, but nothing to do with the actual internal size of the actual pillar itself, the brickwork and stuff like that?
No, because if you remember, a couple of years ago, we spent 25,000 on repairing the stonework and repointing it and all the rest of it. We had to go through quite extensive permissions with East End District Council because it's a listed building. So that payment only covers the annual servicing of the clock piece. As part of the budget review process, Julie and I were talking this morning that we think it would be wise for us to start accruing some money towards the clock tower, because we've got an accrual for Gorfin Hall improvements. So if anything comes up at Gorfin Hall that we need to deal with, we've got money in reserves to deal with that. We don't have anything in reserves for the clock tower. So, you know, if anything happened or there's a deterioration again, it would just be nice to think that rather than us suddenly having to find, you know, £25,000 again in 5 years' time, whatever, if we could accrue that in the same way that we're accruing for the replacement festoon lights on the seafront, then we're spreading the cost. And that was one of the things that we were going to bring to the budget discussions.
The reason why it's such a big figure, 652, the majority of that is because of the
cherry pickers.
Thank you.
And also because they come quite a long way.
Derby.
Smiths of Derby, yeah, and the people that come really and serve. Okay. I think we ought to record that we've got a proposal in a second and that you're happy with this list of submission payments. Are you really happy with it? Proposal in a second, then?
Steve.
I can second it.
Bruce. Okay.
Thank you.
And last but not least, number 11, review of effectiveness of internal audit.
So, as part of your agenda pack, I photocopied the relevant pages from the Governance and Accountability for Local Councils, which is what we have to adhere to in terms of our audit, etc. And you will see that there is non-statutory guidance for internal audit at local council level. But what they suggest that we should do is that we should review our internal audit process once every 3 years, I think it was. Now, we appointed David Hinchliffe in 2016 when our previous internal auditor had to retire on ill health grounds. So what I've photocopied and left on the table for you separately today is a copy of the original appointment letter that we gave to David Hinchliffe. So he's acted as our auditor, internal auditor, since December 2016. There's a copy of the original engagement letter, a copy of the scope, that includes the scope, but also David had prepared a sheet relating to internal audit objectives from his point of view. A copy of a letter that he sent in May 2018 relating to the internal audit for the prior financial year, and a copy of an email that I had just last week, because he's already been in the last month. He's been doing work with Julie and come in and had a look at some salary information with me. He's already, you know, engaged in internally auditing our processes and systems for the current financial year. What we are required to do as part of the accountability practitioner's guide is review the effectiveness of the internal audit according to five criteria, which is to check that you're happy with the scope of the internal audit, to check that you're happy that David Hinchliffe is independent of any council staff, members, or other interests, to check that you're happy that he's competent to do the job, to check that you don't feel that there is any relationship with me or with the council that might jeopardise his impartiality,
and to check that you're happy with the arrangements we have in place for him to come in and to report back to council on his findings. So, first of all, the scope. I mean, we've taken this from best practice. I'm happy with the scope. I don't know if you think there's anything else that ought to be covered. But, I mean, we've specifically said that he needs to refer to this as his Bible when he's conducting internal audits. And this is the guidance that comes from the external auditor. So it's, you know, advice on what we should be looking for the external audit as well as the internal audit. Personally, I'm happy that we've addressed the scope, and David is very, very thorough. Very thorough. He'll go away and mull things over, and then he'll phone Julie or me up and he'll say, just tell me about that again. When was that approved at full council? Can I see the minutes for that? He's very thorough,
yeah,
isn't
very.
He?
Yeah.
Doesn't miss a trick. I'm happy with the scope. As far as I'm aware, he meets the independence criteria because he doesn't have anything to do with any of us. He acts as an internal auditor for quite a few councils in East Devon. He was an East Devon District Council,
Devon
County
Council
auditor. So he meets the competence.
I
should declare an interest in this much. I know David, and he's a very competent man. And as you say, he wouldn't let anything slip.
Obviously, he doesn't have any relationship with me. I'm not related to him. Didn't meet him until he was appointed. And in terms of audit planning and reporting, he normally comes in twice a year. He comes in sort of at some point around the 6 months mark. So as I said, he's been doing some work with Julie and I over the last few weeks. He's happy with everything that he's tested during his visits in the last few weeks. He would now expect to come back towards the end of the financial year when we close our accounts for the year and complete the process. That's normally how we schedule his visits, one sort of at the half year point and then one towards the end of the financial year. And as you can see from the email, he said when he emailed last week, I've had my annual look at your financial and systems and arrangements, all very good. Please can I have half an hour's help to enable me to tick the box in the governance and accountability return, which requires confirmation that salaries to employees and allowances to members were paid in accordance with the authorities' approvals and PAYE and NI requirements were properly applied. And, you know, as part of that process, what he was looking for was evidence that salaries, and particularly the evaluation process that we went through, that was all discussed at full council, that it was minuted, that the salary increases and the nationally negotiated increases were all noted by full council, that it was all duly minuted, and that the arrangements that we have in place with East Devon District Council as our payroll provider, that the agreement is tight and that they are covering, you know, our liabilities in terms of PAYE and national insurance contributions. He picked up that some staff are paid on an hourly rate, which fluctuates from month to month. So those, you know, Derek, for example, you know, staff that are paid on an hourly rate, that there is a fluctuating salary for some staff. So you cross-check that against timesheets, etc. And now he won't be back until May, when we do the year-end close. So what we need to do to be compliant with the accountability guide is we need you to assess whether you're happy with the arrangements in place, the level of reporting, and the scope and independence.
Yeah, obviously, we have to take guidance from you, and I think that's both of you are happy with it. I'm happy to move acceptance, Chair.
No, I was only going to say that obviously the items that they say with review is evidence-based, and I'm sure we've got that evidence-based. I mean, obviously we see the previous review and action plan when we actually accept the internal audit from last time. and the annual report. I presume periodic reports are made, and they are obviously filed as appropriate, so that if they needed to be seen, they could be seen by anybody council-wise. So providing those two or three things there, which obviously we haven't sourced, but I take the word that they have been done and they are evidenced, I'm happy to support that that continues. Mr. Nick Holt has an issue with that in another capacity. I'm sure he does an absolutely thorough job.
Yeah, he really does.
Yes, I know him in a lot of ways.
Okay, thank you very much. So we will minute that you have reviewed the internal audit process and that you're happy with that. Thank you very much.
Has anybody got anything else?
Yeah, can you? This may sound strange, but it's not. I had a chat to Chetland the other day about various sort of things, and she just raised with me that there is an operation
London Bridge,
which is in the
SLCC Clarks magazine,
which is to do with the death of the Queen when if and when it happens.
Oh,
as far as I know, she's still alive.
That's a good job.
But it's asked, I mean, obviously Lisa would know better than me, but I'm only reporting what I was told, that councils are asking to make plans and put funds aside for as and when the 10 days of mourning will happen.
So,
and we have to provide places for rings and stuff like that.
So we were planning to bring this to the... budgets discussions.
But in
essence, you're right, the Society for Local Council Clerks has issued guidance on what the protocols would be should the country go into a 10-day period of state mourning. And what they're highlighting, apart from the practicalities of us perhaps having to organise a condolence book, places for flowers to be left, and flags flying at half mast, and all the practical things, what they're saying is that during that period of mourning, we would have to cancel any events that were pre-planned. And so you need to be thinking about, you know, events that you pre-plan, such as the festival or the Christmas market, etc., and what the financial risks to the council are should we have to cancel something as a result of being in a period of state mourning. I've spoken to Carla today because the SLCC report says that insurance is not available for state mourning, but actually the little bit of research I've had the time to do, I think you can get insurance to cover you. But it's not ordinarily covered as part of an events insurance policy. So what I've suggested to Carla is that particularly in respect of the festival, it would be worth us getting some quotes to find out what insurance cover would be available and what the premiums would be. And then you can decide whether you think that's the biggest financial risk we would have. When I reported earlier that we spent almost £70,000 on delivering the festival last year, some of those costs, we would have to honour if we had to cancel even at short notice. Now, unlike a weather-related thing where, we might be affected by adverse weather on one day or, half a day or something, it's unlikely that the whole festival would be affected by adverse weather. Insurance for adverse weather is quite difficult to get because they're quite specific about what you're trying to cover, and the criteria are very specific.
Where it's measured.
But yes, precisely. But it does seem as though we might be able to mitigate against costs incurred if we had to cancel an event through state mourning. So we'll do a little bit of work on that, and then we will bring that to the budget. In respect of the other things that they're highlighting as part of Operation London Bridge, they're saying that you just need to think about the condolence books and the flags and the flowers and there's lots of practical things that wouldn't have a cost implication on us. The only other thing they're highlighting is that depending on when a state funeral might be held, we might have to, there would be a public holiday for a state funeral,
And that, you know, some organisations that might impact their working capacity wouldn't have any impact on us whatsoever. That's the other thing that I'm thinking.
Can I just add, as far as I understand it, is the insurance market is actually looking at this anyway, because of the very nature of the time we're in, that they always say. And that because it has been brought forward by councils and various other public bodies, that the insurance market is actually looking at this at the moment on ways to be able to cover a certain amount of liability that may be.
So we'll do a bit more research and then we'll get to. So just on, it's not on the agenda, but one other thing I just wanted to highlight is that you'd asked us to look at the grant application form. Richard Scott had asked specifically that we redesign the grant application form so that we got more information. We're not expecting you to make a decision on this, but we've redesigned it and we've got some draft copies of a revised grant application form which we thought you could take with you and have a look at. There is one discrepancy on there. I was trying to, in terms of managing people's expectations for grants, I've put in the preamble that our total budget is £10,000 and it's therefore unlikely that individual grants above £1,500 would be approved. I've just put £1,500 in one part and then I've put £1,000 in another. So that's highlighted, but in fact we're looking for guidance from you as members anyway on whether you think it's appropriate to put that in there. I was just conscious that we've had a few quite meaty applications and there's been a bit of discussion about, you know, how appropriate it is when we've only got a total budget of £10,000 to be receiving applications that would potentially absorb half of that in one application. And therefore, in terms of managing people's expectations, if we could put that on the application form, I think we're just managing it a bit better. So if you don't mind taking one of these with you and then having a look at it and letting us have some feedback. And then it isn't something that needs to go to full council for approval necessarily, because it's just an application form. But hopefully it, you know, it fits with some of the feedback that we've had about the existing application form. It's been updated for the data protection as well to let people know what to let people know what we're doing with the data that we hold. So I don't know if you want to. And as I say, it's not agenda, so we can't, you know, have a lengthy discussion about it or decision now, but we've prepared it and we thought you might like to take it away and have a look at it.
Just a point on the grants. As you know, myself, Richard and Christine have locality budgets for the county, and what we've done is we've ensured that anybody that puts in an application has some sort of match funding. And if they get if their application is approved, it needs to be for equipment and whatever, not for salaries. And we've also said that once you've had one, you can't come back the following year and ask for another one. It must be a break.
Yep. So this, we're not changing the terms of reference for the grant application. If you wanted to change the terms of reference, then that is something that would need to be approved by full council. What this is doing is just changing the application form so that you've got greater information available to you to enable you to make an informed decision. If you want to change the terms of reference for grants generally, then that would need to go to full council. This is just the application form.
No, I was just saying, because it's you need the CIO on that list. Well, it's a lot on the cooperating community group, local grants, national charity company, limited by guarantee.
So that's
but it's got to have CIO when you're not there.
Okay, brilliant.
Because all the new ones are CIO, and we are changing from limited to guarantee.
Right.
It's going in phases by government.
Okay, that's fine.
But any new charity, and indeed, a lot of the small charities already changed to CIOs.
Right, okay. That's fine.
Mine's nothing to do with this, my question.
Okay.
Okay. No, it's just that we agreed that we'd have an informal meeting concerning the budget, and I raised it previously, and I was just wondering if we could perhaps agree a date, because that's an all-party meeting concerning the informal budget.
Yeah.
Okay,
let me know when you think. I've got my diary with me, so we can fix a date now and a time. I was going to email everybody, but I thought actually it's easier just to have councillors here and to do it here, because otherwise people would come up and say...
Well, the budget needs to be agreed at the January full council, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So we need to have the meeting.
And yeah, Julie and I have done the first draft of the budget today, based on, you know, our existing expenditure and things that we know about. Obviously, you know, maybe that doesn't include projects that might come forward, or, you know, ideas that might come from, forward from chairman of working parties. But we've looked at the base budget based on our base costs.
Yeah.
So we're pretty much ready to present that. There's a tiny bit of tidying up that needs doing on it, but, you know, we're pretty much ready to present it as it is. And so if you like, you know, if you'd like to suggest some dates.
I'll leave it to the rest of you.
What about the 3rd of December?
We've got a...
The first Monday in December. You've got community safety...
That's in the afternoon, isn't it?
Flood resilience in the afternoon.
In the afternoon, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
But have we got anything else on in the evening?
3rd of December, no.
3rd of December.
I mean, it makes sense it being a Monday, because most people are free on a Monday.
Yeah,
I mean, personally, isn't it? Most councils are free on a Monday. We need to have it put in December.
Are you okay with that?
It's January.
Yeah, I mean, it's all right by me.
Okay. 3rd of December?
Yeah.
Is that, if you have it on the 3rd of December, we've normally got to get the budget, the precept request in by the third week of January. So that would give us scope to have another meeting potentially in January, if you wanted to have another meeting.
Yeah,
outside of a full council meeting where you have to ratify the budget, that gives us scope to have another one in January.
Last time we went away with things, didn't we?
I'm sorry. I've got an extra round of tickets tomorrow.
Did you hear that? Yeah. He said he's going to... Oh, it's a lot now. Oh, sure. Okay.
So the 3rd of December.
Yeah.
And what time?
6.
Well, I mean,
the time for finish work,
obviously,
well, no,
we need Lynn here.
Well, no, I mean, I can make 6 o'clock, obviously, because Lynn, you might just leave work in time to be in for 6. So
if we invite all councillors to a meeting on the 3rd of December at 6 o'clock, and we will circulate a draft budget before then for councillors to have a look at. I'll have a look at the way it's presented so that it's as intuitive as possible for people.
You especially, we asked, or spoke to Steve about it as well, wanting to know exactly what our reserves were.
So the reserves, earmarked reserves are, they were circulated at the annual town council meeting in May. That was after our year end, so nothing more has been added to those, because that's just an annual adjustment that we make. But we can circulate that with the agenda as we can circulate it with the draft budget as well. But we've got 361,672 in earmarked reserves. It's a bit high, but yeah, 361,162.
It's high,
yeah. So that includes £83,000 in the sinking fund, the £63,000 in salaries, which is
for
that's a biggie. We've got £35,000 in CCTV, although I've had confirmation.
I think next year would be alright.
We're all like next year, maybe the year after. There's 26,000 in economic development, 25,000 in town management, almost 40,000 in town maintenance. But at the budget meeting, I can give you an update on a proposal we've had from Fernbank to do with bus shelters, which would negate our need to look after bus shelters going forward. So that's quite a good move. There's some reserves for the festival, there's reserves for elections.
Yeah.
So, yes.
It's gone green, isn't it?
So we've got earmarked reserves, and then we've got general reserves, which is normally calculated as 3 months working capital, 3 months working capital for us.
Right.
So, but we can circulate that with the draft agenda, the draft budget, rather.
I mean, as district council, I haven't had any indication yet what district
will
be doing, whether they may be getting rid of X, Y, and Z and asking us to take it on.
Well, we don't know that.
No, we won't know. But we may not need another meeting if they come forward with doing away, just top of my head, say toilets, you know.
So,
the solution, good thing is they can't raise our rent for another 4 years, isn't
no.
it?
The council support grant will be withdrawn completely this year from us.
Yeah.
So, but we were down to only an £8,000 contribution on council tax support anyway, so that's not going to make a huge impact. I have been invited, Mark Williams has been doing all the staff briefings for East Devon District Council staff in relation to budgetary pressures, and I have been invited to his next briefing next Monday, so I'd be interested to see what message he's giving out to staff in terms of the pressure the district council is coming under, and that would be useful background information, I think. I don't know if anything specific would come out.
I think we'll make a point to East Devon, I know both sides of it have made a point to East Devon, and it was so late that we were told certain things last year that, you know, we were going into the January meeting and about a week before East Devon District Council had told us it was likely we were going to have to pay for something or not pay for something. And I think we've all got pressure on district councillors to try and find something out before that, which is why we need a night, which is why we probably will need another meeting in January to, because we may have other
scrutiny is Townsend said that in order of repeated last year's January all day will rush us through performance. He spent, I don't know how long, talking about a fence for against rabbits around some cricket went on the road.
So, I mean, actually, as usual, we probably won't get the information relating to our electoral roll and, you know, the council tax data. We probably won't get that until late in December, and that is always the last bit of information that we're waiting for to be able to calculate the equivalent bandy figures for you. But if you can agree in principle that you're happy with the budget, then that will just fall into place.
I think going on from that, the electoral roll, as I understand it, might that would be late anyway because of the change in bankers. Because I've been told that might well not be the usual date in December for electoral rolls,
right?
Because of the fact that the boundary changes and few tweaks here and there which have not been downloaded properly.
Okay.
I've just got one that the leader of Devon County Council, John Hart, will be going around parishes down.
Does every year?
Yeah, but we need to invite him this year if we can.
Okay. Do you want to sign that check?
Oh, and the other thing, November 27th, there's a training for the Dragon's Den or something? Application?
So, as part of the Communities Together support that we're offering to organisations who want to apply to that funding, Chetan has organised for somebody to do some training for interested organisations. Because part of the whole the Dragon's Den style is that they have to come and give a presentation. Chetan is part of the process of advertising the fact that we have this funding available. We're also offering some advice and some training on how people can deliver their pitch as part of the Dragon's Den event.
I have had some people asking whether that couldn't have been shifted to 5:30 because some of the play groups, some of the nurseries and things like that actually carry on through to 5, and I was going to email check them actually, but it's only this week that people have come forward and said, is there any chance of shifting, because a lot of the groups, their secretaries and treasurers and chairmen and things actually work, and it's tight for 5:00, and they're saying they're going to take an hour off work or finish early, and they're just wondering whether it couldn't have been 5:30 or 6:00 or 5:30.
I'll check.
It's
a delivery part,
so let me
check, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Joe.